Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ. My name is Mark. Thank you for joining me again this week. I recorded a podcast last week, and the Bulls happened to be on a two-game winning streak at that point. And honestly, when I was sort of planning out this podcast for this week, I did not expect to, I guess, open the show with another spiel about the Bulls being on a continued winning streak. But look, here we are. The team is on a five-game winning streak, and I guess up is down at the moment. Black is white, and everything is just in complete reverse, so I don't really know how to process all of this myself. So joining me today on the podcast is Will Gottlieb from The Athletic. He's going to be on here trying to, I guess, help make sense of all this, of what's going on and how the Bulls are winning these games and looking like a completely different team. So, Will, appreciate you jumping on.
It's a pleasure. I know we've done a bunch of podcasts together. I think I was on Podman, and I know you've been on my show a bunch, but I don't think I've been on Bulls HQ. Is that right? Or am I forgetting?
I want to say it's right. It sounds right. And I think we've tried a few times to make it happen. And then maybe that's why in my mind it feels like you've been on, but you're probably right. I don't think you have, because I've done probably half solo pods and then the other half being podcast with the guests, but you may not have been on. So if this is the first time, it's well overdue.
Yeah, I'm not remembering. I could just be blocking it out because I was a really bad guest or something. But anyway, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Anytime, mate. But look, I'm glad you're on here because I need someone to help me break down what is happening at the moment with the Bulls. It doesn't make any sense at all. The team is on a five-game win streak. They're doing it on, I guess the way they're playing has been completely unsustainable, and it really, if you just think about probabilities, it makes no sense whatsoever. So I want you on here because you're an analytical mind. You're obviously a very talented Bulls writer, and I need someone here to really help me explain to myself and as well as my listeners, because it does not make any sense. How are they doing this, Will? I don't get it.
I mean, I think we just have to preface this by saying how crazy of a situation this is. I retweeted Micah Adams, who I think works for ESPN, last night. Yeah, ESPN Stats and Info. And he shared the BPI percent chance of winning each of these individual games for the past five games. So 15% win percentage against the Hornets, 32 against the Knicks, 17 against the Celtics, 25 against the Jazz, and 16 against the Bucks. So, like, less than 33% on all these, less than 20 on most of them. It's really incredible that they keep pulling out these wins. I know you want to get into Nico. I have been really impressed with him. He's been fantastic, but really it's everybody. I mean, Chris Dunn is playing really well. He's kind of starting to put things together, shooting kind of okay, a little shaky still, but he's looked really good. Bobby Portis has been playing really well. It's just a full team effort, and it's really improbable, but you know, it's happening. Five games in a row. I can't believe it.
Yeah, it's crazy. And if you think about the Fred Hoiberg era, I guess we shouldn't be surprised, because the Bulls have always been unpredictable during his tenure here. If you think about last season, there were stretches with the Rondo and Wade team where that obviously looked pretty poor, looked old, slow, no spacing whatsoever. But then all of a sudden, over two to three games, the team would look absolutely amazing, as they did in the first two games of the playoff series against the Celtics. So the unexplainable does happen under Fred Hoiberg, and I guess this is what's happening here. We used to reference that team as the bipolar Bulls, and it's kind of happened here. Like, I was looking at the defensive, or I guess the offensive rating and defensive rating of the team between games 1 to 23 and then games 24 to 28. It's like literally the exact opposite. The team was 30th in offensive rating, 28th in defensive rating, and 30th overall in net rating. And through this five-game winning streak, they're 12th in offense, 4th in defense, and 4th in net rating, which is just ridiculous. And you obviously mentioned the players that are contributing to that, but it still doesn't make sense to me, like, even if players are improving or, you know, playing much better, that to go from the 30th ranked team or the 30th ranked offense to all of a sudden the 12th, it's truly bizarre.
It is bizarre. And I think a lot of it is just some regression to the mean. Like, during that 10-game losing streak, I don't think they, I mean, there were a few games in there where they probably should have won. There have been a few games in this 5-game win streak that they probably should have lost, so and this is something that I talked about on my show with Stefan Noh, is that, like, I think it evens itself out. you know, 5 games in a row is definitely more than I thought. And it's more, it's like a quarter of the amount of wins that I thought they would win all year. And to do that in 5 games is pretty crazy. But I do think like some of the stuff that we're seeing out there is sustainable. Some of it, not so much. Like they're shooting a super high percentage. I don't know the exact number on mid-range jumpers during this win streak. They're just going crazy from three. I mean, it's all these things that are just falling right. And as you said, I mean, it's totally in line with what we've seen over the Fred Hoiberg era. Like, you know, the couple wins that they had in Boston in the playoffs last year, the TNT streak continuing. I mean, it's just like all these crazy, inexplicable things that it's just coming to fruition somehow.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about what they are doing so that is, I guess, sustainable and potentially we need to worry about in, I guess, in terms of the ramifications for a tanking season. So let's talk about that. And I guess where I want to focus on is the power forward rotation as well as this improved bench, because to me, that's not going to go away anytime soon. And that's really made the Bulls a completely different team. And they've got, I guess, an 8-to-9-man rotation now that at minimum, if they play this hard and compete every night, they're going to be in a lot of games.
Yeah, the addition of Nico back into the lineup has really changed things. Just pushing everybody back in the rotation. I know Markkanen has been out these past couple of games with those back spasms, which is a little frightening, but you know, limiting Bobby's minutes, who can just kind of hemorrhage points defensively. Getting Nwaba back, who's been just a revelation this year, which limits Valentine's minutes, who's also really not great defensively. Chris Dunn has improved, and that's limited Jaren Grant's minutes. So all these guys who were playing really poorly are just getting fewer and fewer minutes. And I think, you know, we're not, that doesn't even mention the addition of Zach LaVine, who's going to come back in the next month or so. So the depth and the injury situation, I think I certainly was not prepared for how much of an effect that would have on winning and losing this year at the start of the season. But it seems like it's really kind of affected them in the past couple of games. And then on top of that, I think there's this notion of the unquantifiable that like Fred and Nico have been talking about after these games. And really everybody is just like feeling really confident, feeling like they're playing the system that they want to play. And those aren't necessarily things that you can put a number on. Although like, I think the pace has been up and, you know, there are different metrics that you can look at in that way. But, I think they're just more confident. They're playing better basketball and they know it and they're making their shots. And, you know, I don't know that like the shooting percentages will always stay the same, but, you know, 55% true shooting, that's over the past 5 games, that's above average. So, you know, maybe that goes back down and they start losing again. But, you know, we're seeing a lot of things that I think do sustain and can kind of, even though they might hurt the tank, kind of show you that this team is maybe got some more pieces than I thought going into the season.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And to me, particularly in this Bucks game, and what I saw was this competitive edge or this tenacious edge that we saw from the team when they were sort of getting down and it looked like the Bucks were going to really, I guess, extend their lead in the first quarter and take over. Typically, that's where, I guess, the Bulls team of the first 20 games would have folded, particularly going into that second quarter. That's where the team really lost a lot of games in that second quarter when Fred had to insert guys like Poindexter or Antonio Blakeney or Paul Zipsa, even Cade Felder, these sort of players that probably aren't really NBA players and shouldn't be in a rotation for a good NBA team. He was having to rely not on just one of those guys, but two or three at a time in a rotation. So just erasing those guys from the rotation and replacing them with Mirotić and Portis and David Nwaba, it's completely changed the complexion of the team where you can actually, it's almost palpable, the team's confidence. And like I said in that Bucks game, I thought they were going to give up the lead, but all of a sudden in comes Bobby Portis and David Nwaba, and with Chris Dunn on the floor, those three sort of steadied the ship and actually gave the Bulls a lead. And I was sitting there at halftime thinking, okay, the Bulls are up here 59-58. Any other game, maybe let's say it was game 10 of the season, they probably were down 20 points at that point.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you have to put Niko Mirotić into that situation as well with the more passable defenders on the floor. I've always been on Niko Mirotić Island in terms of not only him being kind of misunderstood offensively, but I've always thought he's been a very solid above average defender positionally, obviously not a rim protector, but knows where to be on the floor, can kind of jump passing lanes and get out and get some steals. He times his shot blocking well and like is not a rim protector, but does block some shots. So limiting Bobby Portis's minutes, as I said, and putting him in there, I think that helps raise the defensive ceiling. And we're seeing it. I mean, 98.5 defensive rating over these past five games, which is first in the league. So really impressive defensive stand from them. And that's kind of keeping them in these games where before we might have seen them kind of blow a 20-point lead or a 17-point lead like they did against the Pacers in the fourth quarter last Friday. Now they're keeping their foot on the gas pedal. The offense seems more directed and the defense has been great and it's helping them win games.
Yeah, it is. And like I said before, it's completely baffling. So let's talk about the unsustainable stuff, because to me, that's more fun to talk about, I guess. And one of the surprising things about this team at the moment is, I guess, the dynamic between Bobby Portis and Nikola Mirotić. So I think it would have been completely justified and completely normal if the two came together, or couldn't come together, I guess I should say, and weren't able even to share the floor together, given what happened in the preseason. It's just crazy that one guy broke another guy's face. They were both in an altercation. You would think that would end the relationship to the point where they wouldn't actually want to be in the same room together. Yet here they are on the court together, playing most of their minutes together, at least a good chunk of their minutes. And they're not just playing well together, they're absolutely dominating teams. So it's a small sample size, only 54 minutes, but the Portis and Mirotić combination is outscoring their opponents by 34.3 points per 100 possessions, which is just bonkers. So 54 minutes isn't a huge sample, but it's big enough to suggest that this pairing is working really well. Now, to me, I assume it's unsustainable based on their shooting numbers. The Bulls at the moment over the last five games, pretty much getting 35 points from Mirotić and Portis combined, and both are shooting over 50% on threes through that stretch. I'm assuming that's going to be unsustainable.
The 3-point stuff is, I think, just between them, you know, obviously Nico's not going to continue to shoot 50% on threes. I don't know exactly what Bobby's been shooting. That's going to go down. If there's anything we know about Niko and his 3-point shooting, it's that it's inconsistent. And so that I feel pretty confident in. But the team is shooting 25% of their field goal percentage. 25% of their shots are coming from three. And I don't think that the percentage is that much different. I think it's actually lower than I'm looking. Percent of points on field goal percent on threes is 34% on the year and 25% over the last five games. So they have been shooting a lot of threes, but that isn't necessarily what's winning them games. I think it's more the mid-range attempts that are just going crazy. We've seen a lot of step-in twos. We've seen a lot of face-up from the post from Niko and Bobby, and they're shooting 63% on those over the past five games, up from 55% on the season. So I think that's where they're scoring a lot of their points and maybe won't necessarily sustain.
Yeah, I think you're right there. But at the same time, they are playing a confident brand of basketball. And whilst their percentages will come down, I'm not sitting here thinking that either are suddenly going to regress to a player that I guess is going to be non-effective at all. They still look like they're going to be quality players. And they're both guys that really thrive when they've got the opportunity to be volume offensive players. So once Markkanen is back, it'll be interesting to see how Fred manages this situation, because it'll be his first real test in the front court of how to balance three guys at power forward that are actually worthy of 20 to 25 minutes each. So I'm interested to see how that plays out once Markkanen is back, and hopefully that is very soon. But we've obviously been talking a lot about Nikola Mirotić, but I wanted to really expand on his game, obviously, because he's been back and looking like an MVP all of a sudden. But you wrote a good piece up on The Athletic about, I guess, how he's playing and how he's putting it together. So given that you're on, I wanted to reference that article and really dive into it and sort of explain to the listeners how Mirotić is going about this, because it's not just about the 3-point shot. He's playing a complete basketball game at the moment.
I think that's exactly it. The past couple of years, he's been playing like fourth or fifth fiddle, watching Jimmy and Dwayne Wade kind of isolate from the mid post. He's been relegated to the role of spot up shooter, where he is good at shooting from the corners, but not very good at shooting from above the break. And I think it's just kind of a misconception in, you know, what kind of player he is. I think he's much better with the ball in his hands. I've advocated for a couple years now to put him in more pick and roll situations, whether it's handling or as a roll man. I think he can do both. And we're seeing that now. I mean, he's bringing the ball up the court and pulling up for three. He's getting deep into the low post and like scoring on guys when they switch a smaller guy onto him. Just destroyed Marcus Smart, who's a great post defender, against the Celtics the other night, but also would blow by Al Horford and get to the rim. So he's really just doing everything. I think, as you mentioned, the confidence is huge. He's just shooting the lights out. Like I said, I don't know if that's going to sustain, but it is just good to see him kind of playing a more complete offensive game. And I think that that opens things up for him, right? Where so if he's defended on the three-point line, he can still break you down off the dribble or get into the post. If there's a guy that's too big on him in the post, he can kind of face you up and go by you or do a step back jumper. I mean, he's just showing so many offensive moves right now, and we just haven't seen this since really his rookie season.
Yeah, exactly. And I was going to bring up his rookie season, but there's been other points in his career as well when he's had these sort of outbursts. And I guess the narrative around Mirotić is that he's an inconsistent, hot and cold type player that, you know, every now and then will have these sort of scoring outbursts, particularly in March. But outside of that, he's, you know, not necessarily a productive player. And I've always challenged that notion because, or thinking that it was more to do with role than his actual ability. And so to me, it's not completely out of left field that Mirotić is doing this. And we've seen it before, but we've only seen it in parts because Mirotić hasn't always been in these sort of roles, which you sort of referenced just before. And in his rookie season, we saw this because the Bulls really needed someone who could come off the bench and be a focal point of the offense. We saw it, I think it was in 2016, in March, just by, I guess, happenstance, that the Bulls had a few injuries and Mirotić was able to come in and, again, be that focal point and not be relegated just into being a spot-up shooter. He's never really been a spot-up shooter or a knockdown three-point shooter. He's always been a scorer, someone that, I guess, can score in a multitude of ways and probably gets that three-point shot rolling after he gets some confidence going to the rim or putting the ball on the floor and getting to the free-throw line. So do you think this is more about Mirotić having an extended role in a role that he's actually comfortable in? And if so, have the Bulls been, I guess, misusing Mirotić for the last two seasons?
I mean, this kid was in his early 20s the MVP of the Spanish League. And then he comes over and shoots 60% of his shots from three. I mean, that is not the right way to use Nico. This is the first year where he's been under 50% of his shots from three. He's right now at 46. The second lowest was his rookie year when he was at 50%, which was still really high. I think the other thing with him is getting to the free throw line, which really bolsters his efficiency. Right now, he's shooting an otherworldly 67 true shooting percentage. That's not going to stay as high as it is. That's like Steph Curry 2014-15 level. But he has the highest free throw attempt rate since his rookie year. It's 33% as opposed to 45%. But the past 2 years, it's been 20 and 30%. So much, much better getting to the free throw line. And like I said, diversifying his offense. And I think that opens up all these different scoring avenues for him. And I think the fact that the Bulls don't really have anybody that can create their own offense, you know, I think he's the best person at doing that on the team right now. And we're seeing him do it really well. The degree of difficulty of these shots is not going to be getting any easier as teams kind of decide they want to game plan around Nico, because he's the one that's kind of opening up all the offense for everybody else right now. Obviously the assists aren't there, but just the scoring is kind of attracting a lot of attention. And so that's going to become harder and harder. But I think this is absolutely the role that Nico is kind of built for. I think there's a middle ground too, where he can kind of be a second or third option as opposed to a first option, or a fifth option. But I think this is more along the lines of the Nico that, you know, the Nico truthers like you and me have been hoping for.
Yeah, and I guess I can sit here comfortable as well as yourself and I feel somewhat vindicated. But at the same time, I am interested to see, or maybe a little bit skeptical as well, as to how Fred Hoiberg manages this version of Nikola Mirotic when Lauri Markkanen is back. So I wanted to focus on the front court rotation, particularly at power forward. So I spoke about it last week with VJ Vemu about how Fred Hoiberg can sort of manage this front court, but I didn't expect, I guess, at the same time, Bobby Portis and Nikola Mirotic to be playing so well that they really should be playing upwards of 20 or 25 minutes a game. And it was working nicely for Fred previously once Markkanen was in the lineup because he was still giving 28 to 30 minutes to Lowry. He was still starting him. So on that front, it made a lot of sense. And he was sort of picking and choosing which big man he wanted to use as that backup power forward, be it Portis and Mirotic, and both were around that 15 to 20 minute mark. But based on the way they're playing at the moment, there's going to be, I think, a little bit of an adjustment here. So if you were Fred Hoiberg, how would you be managing this situation at power forward?
Well, I think it's not necessarily limited to power forward. There's some news that happened just a couple of minutes ago, recording this on a Saturday afternoon Central Time. But Chris Felicio was assigned to the Windy City Bulls. I think he's pretty much out of the rotation. And I think that we're going to see a lot more of Nico and Bobby both playing backup center as Markkanen comes back. They've been playing together, so they have both been playing the five just a little bit. But I think that we're going to see more of these five-out lineups. I think that's more along the lines of what Fred wants to do. I'm excited to see more of Lowry and Nico. I think that could be a really fun pairing in the front court. It's mostly been Bobby playing backup center, but so that kind of leaves you with four guys instead of five to manage in that front court. And I think also, like, you're gonna not see Zipser playing any more four. He was doing that just a little bit when Nico was out. So I think those minutes will kind of normalize in that way. And there's gonna be just a lot of different pairings between those two. But I think ultimately you have to play Nico, you have to play Lowry. Those are like the two guys that you have to play. I think Bobby's minutes are going to take a little bit of a hit just because of the defense. I mean, he shot 9 of 16 last night, which is great, but I don't think you can count on that every night. And so if he's not just absolutely on fire, I can see him losing some minutes. And then I could see Lopez losing some minutes just because, you know, he's the most professional guy on the team and understands the value of having those five out lineups. And, you know, I think that's just what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And Lopez is one of those guys that just completely goes under the radar. So last night against the Bucks, he had 18 points, 8 rebounds, 6 of them being offensive, and played 29 strong minutes. And you pretty much don't hear a word about his game at all, which I guess makes sense given what Mirotic and Portis were doing. But obviously Lopez brings a lot of value to this team, but he's averaging 30 minutes a game this season. Same thing with Lowry Markkanen, they're both at 30, and obviously those numbers are bolstered by the fact that Portis and Mirotic were out for a good chunk of the season, so Fred obviously had to rely on these guys. But I'm expecting their minutes to drop maybe 2 to 3 minutes each at least. Do you think Lowry will lose minutes?
That's about right. I think probably a couple. I don't think it's going to be slash and half or anything like that. It certainly better not be. But I could definitely see him losing some minutes. But at the same time, I mean, you have to really have your eyes on the future here and know that, you know, Nico and Bobby, neither of them are probably going to be around for the next, like, real great Bulls team. I don't think that, well, maybe Bobby stays around, but I don't think Nico is going to be around past even this year. I think they probably try to move him. I know they're trying to. So that could certainly free up some minutes, but you really have to think about the importance of, like, developing Lowry here. That's got to be priority number one.
I would agree with that, but I'm sort of wondering, do you think there is a chance here that Fred Hoiberg tries not to disrupt Mirotic in the starting unit, and do you think there's a chance that Lowry Markkanen comes back as a backup big, or do you think he goes straight back into the starting lineup once he returns?
You know, that's a tough one. I've always struggled with that decision. Like, if somebody gets hurt and then they lose their spot, I think it's easy when it's like a star player and a clear backup to just say, yeah, you can have your spot back. But I do understand why some people might say, like, Nico's playing really well right now. We got to keep him, keep this going and keep him kind of happy, keep his minutes up. I think they're going to be taking a pretty conservative role with Lowry in terms of his back. I think this is starting to worry me a little bit just because it's been a problem since basically Eurobasket. And so I think they're going to limit his minutes a little bit in that way. But ultimately, I don't necessarily think it matters who starts. I want the majority of minutes to go to Markkanen. So as long as he's healthy, I don't really think it matters if they bring him off the bench. Like I said, I think it's more likely that Nico is gone by the trade deadline than anything. And so if they start him for a month or two just to pump that value, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, look, I would agree with that. And I guess this power forward rotation is going to be an interesting microcosm or a subplot of how the team is going to really perform from here on out. Do they really try to rely on guys like Mirotić or Lopez, David Nwala, who I guess are more seasoned, more mature in terms of age, around that, I guess, 25 years old range, which Nwaba and Mirotić are. Lopez is obviously a little bit older, around that 30 mark. And it'll be interesting to see now if the team really starts to rely on these veterans to, I guess, try to win games, or do they try to scale it back and actually try to get that tank back on track, and I guess try to limit what Mirotić is doing, as well as maybe moving guys like Lopez and Mirotić. So let's quickly talk about that, because I think that's going to feed into the next point that I wanted to raise thereafter. And it's another, I guess, piece that was written on The Athletic this week by your colleague Stefan Noe, is, I guess, looking at potential trade partners or ways that the Bulls could potentially move on from Nikola Mirotić and Robin Lopez, who are obviously the two most experienced guys in the front court, and both obviously have played and will play very useful roles in that front court. So in your mind, do you think the Bulls need to trade both? Or if it's just one guy, which one do you think it is more, I guess, prevalent to move?
I think, you know, I love both of these guys. I am a big fan of Robin, who just does everything with the team first in mind. I've just always been a fan of Nico and always thought that he had more potential than the way he was performing. And so, like we said, it's like nice to see him playing this well. If you look at it from the perspective of other teams who are trying to compete right now, who are the ones that would likely be looking at a guy like Nico or Robin Lopez, right? Because they're a little bit older. You want, you know, a couple of years on their contract remaining that are, they're both on pretty like team friendly deals. It's going to be a team that is competitive, that's trying to get over the top, that's trying to add some depth to get over the top, right? So I think Mirotić probably has some more value in that way just because he's a more modern player. I don't think there are very many teams who are seeking kind of a slow-footed big man like Robin Lopez. I mean, Robin has shown that he can hit the mid-range jumper. He's shown that he can be kind of a reliable post scorer with that ice cream scoop hook shot. But I just don't think very many teams are looking for that. They're looking for guys that you can plug in at the end of the game to switch on to point guards on pick and roll. They're looking for stretch fives that can also kind of defend the rim and like step out onto guards, right? And Lopez just doesn't really fit that bill. And I think because of that, he's more valuable to the Bulls than he would be to any other team. I don't know, if I was another team, I would not give up a first round pick for Lopez, I don't think. I mean, it would take a very certain situation, like maybe in Portland, if Yusuf Nurkic gets hurt and they are trying to make a playoff push, they could kind of try to get Lopez back. He spent a lot of time there. But it just seems like it would have to be an injury, because every team already has that center that they're trying to figure out what to do with, whether it's the Raptors and with Jonas Valanciunas or, you know, Mason Plumlee or whoever it is. Teams just aren't really looking for that kind of player. And so I think it becomes more valuable for the Bulls to have that leadership quality, that team first mentality, to have him around trying to teach these guys those characteristics more than it would a second round draft pick. With Nico, I think the way he's playing right now, you probably get a little bit more for him. I think teams would be more interested in a player like Nika, who's a good positional defender, who's playing really well offensively, who can kind of take guys who are too big off the dribble or post up guys that are too small. He's been playing a lot smarter this year. So I hope that a team that can kind of coach him up and continue to make him into like a smarter player, I would hope that, that would be the kind of team that would be looking for him. And I don't know if it's a first round pick. I would hope so. I think he's worth it. But I just think it makes more sense to move on from Nico, because one, he's helping the Bulls win too many games, and it's on Gar Foreman and John Paxson to basically not give Fred Hoiberg enough to work with to win games right now, because they need that number one pick. And you know, it's on, and I think there's always this battle between the front office doing that and the coach still wanting to win games. And I think he's going to keep playing Nico because Nico keeps playing well.
Yeah, look, I agree pretty much 100% with everything you just said, and surprise, surprise about that. But
sorry, I was rambling.
No, you made complete sense, and I'm happy for you to go on those long tangents when they make complete sense. And if you weren't going to, that's exactly what was going to be my answer. And I think what we need to remember about Robin Lopez is the team was 3-20 with him. So whilst he's doing a lot of good things, and I've been wildly impressed with how effective he has been in the development of Chris Dunn and Lauri Markkanen, and how he makes, I guess, the game so much easier for those players, which is obviously imperative for really young players, having these sort of role players that can be out there teaching them on the court as well as off the court. The Bulls were still a bad team with Robin Lopez, so even if they do keep him around, we've seen enough of a sample to suggest that the team can be a bad team with him around while still producing good competitive basketball and teaching these younger players how to be good professionals. Whereas with Mirotić, that he's obviously come in straight away and the team has won 5 games, and he's, like I said, playing like an MVP of sorts, which is obviously somewhat of an exaggeration, but he's been at an all-star level, let's say. But thinking about it, obviously Mirotić is the one that needs to go, and to expand on your point there, he also, I guess, has the more favorable contract in the sense that his second year is a team option. Mirotić would have to agree to a trade. He does have the veto ability to, I guess, deny the Bulls a trade. But I think if the team were to move into, I guess, it's just a situation that makes sense and he would have a similar role, I don't necessarily think he would veto that trade. If they were sending him to a terrible team, obviously he may do so. But I think with good open communication that it should be a situation where they would be able to move on from each other. So that's what I'm hoping, at least. And two teams that I think may be suitable destinations for Nikola Mirotić, and I'm probably, I guess, looking at it this more from a Chicago's perspective than also these two teams themselves, and who knows if they would actually agree to it, but the Utah Jazz currently have the 12th worst record in the league, looking at a lottery pick at this point, but even if it's not, it should be a pick around in that mid-first range, as well as the Minnesota Timberwolves. So obviously there is a connection with the Chicago Bulls there, but the Wolves currently have the OKC pick, which is currently sitting at pick 16 at the moment. So they're two teams where I think could need a bit of a boost at power forward. The Jazz, I guess, have tried this Gobert and Favors lineup for quite a while now, and I think they need to move on with that. I think having Gobert there makes sense at center, but they need that stretch option at power forward, and they've been playing a lot of Jonas Jerebko there, and I guess Mirotić is an upgrade over Jerebko. And the Wolves themselves, Tibbs is pretty much only playing 8 players at the moment, and they definitely need some front court help. I wonder if either the Jazz or the Minnesota Timberwolves would be interested in Nico.
I think both those teams make a lot of sense. I hadn't thought about the Nico and Tibbs thing a little bit, but yeah, I mean, I think the Jazz would be a great fit. Rudy Gobert just went down with another PCL injury last night, and so they are going to be sliding Favors back over to the center and playing a lot of Jerebko. I could see them needing Nico and him being like a really good fit there. I think there are other teams like the Spurs, the Nets, who I just think are really smart teams that would use him the right way, that could get a lot out of him. that might be interested. It's all going to depend on money and picks, right? Like the Bulls have to be able to basically get assets back no matter what they do. And so it's just going to be a matter of who can afford that.
Exactly. And like I said, I was probably looking at it more so from Chicago's perspective, because for the Jazz, obviously they'd like to have a player like Nikola Mirotic on their roster, but at the same time, would they be willing to give up a potential lottery pick for Mirotic? Probably not. And same thing with Minnesota. They desperately need a talent infusion, but they're sitting fourth in the West at the moment. They're not going 100%, but I guess they're still fourth in the West and have a good winning record, so maybe they're not ready to shake things up just yet. But I guess what I was looking at was teams that are on the precipice of a playoff performance, may need a bolster of that rotation and someone that can help them score the ball. And those were two teams that I was looking at. So hopefully the Bulls are focusing on that and maybe they could find a good first round pick for Mirotic. But I guess something else that I was looking at as well, which is a little bit comical, is, and not necessarily a first round pick, but maybe they could engineer a trade back to New York, or receiving back, I should say, that pick that they gave away in the Cameron Payne trade, which is currently sitting second in the second round, which is going to be a valuable second rounder. So maybe they could offload one of Mirotic and Lopez to New York and maybe recoup that second round, the second rounder that they lost in the McDermott and Payne trade.
Don't even get me started about these traded second round picks. Yeah, I also just thought of Detroit could be another one. I think he fits the Stan Van Gundy the bill there. Mm-hmm. The Hornets, maybe the Wizards. I don't know. I mean, I think there I could see Nico landing in a lot of different places where maybe Robin is a little bit harder to find a partner with. And so I guess that's part of the reason why I think it makes more sense to try to deal Nico. I mean, the other thing is, and we haven't talked about this yet, is Bobby Portis being on the move. I think he's kind of rehabilitated his image a little bit, at least since the whole like fight thing. And he's obviously been playing really well. He's going to be third on the power forward depth chart. Maybe a team sees him and says, you know, he's been playing a little five. Maybe we convert him to a full-time five. He can shoot the ball. He can score in the post a little bit, and they can kind of use him as just like a scoring big off the bench. Doesn't necessarily need to be much in the way of a defender. So maybe a team wants him too, and I'd be happy to get him off the roster.
Yeah, look, I was pretty adamant that I didn't want to see Bobby Portis back on this roster after that incident occurred, but he has been playing really well, and yeah, maybe he is an option a bit at the same time. Of the three that we mentioned, he's probably the least likely to go, because whilst Mirotic was involved in that altercation, he was the one that had the broken face. He wasn't one that threw the fist, so that's hard. That's a hard image to rehabilitate, and even though he's been playing better, I think the Bulls are going to be stuck with him to a degree. But yeah, maybe he is an option as we get closer into January and February. Maybe things change a little bit. But the reason why I wanted to talk about those trades was, I guess, that it may be necessary that the Bulls need to pull their finger out, I guess, and start making some moves around these trades, because the team is playing obviously a really competitive brand of basketball at the moment. They're 5-0 over their last five games, but even if they were 2-3, I think the team is looking completely different now to the one that we saw in the first 20 to 25 games of the season. It's completely changed, and we've talked about how they're playing and why they're looking better. But I guess what I wanted to focus on now is around this tanking or this rebuilding that the Bulls were meant to be in, and it potentially being in jeopardy. I know there's sort of varying opinions out there as to whether the Bulls are going to remain a bad team or not, but where do you sit on that?
So they went from being the number one projected pick before the five-game win streak to the number third projected pick. The number second pick is Dallas right now, and they are two games out. And the number nine pick is five games out. So three games separate these seven teams. The Bulls are 2.5. So, but I mean, if they keep winning, this is all very jumbled here and could get out of like the top 10 pretty quickly. I don't think that will necessarily happen. I mean, they need to stay hot. And I think this is more of an anomaly than something that you can expect going forward. But it does get you a little bit worried, right? I mean, this is a quarter of the wins that I was expecting this team to have this year. So, I am a little worried. I think, like I said, it's on the front office to like make this happen more than it is the coaching staff. I don't think that you can feasibly ask Fred Hoiberg to lose games on purpose. I think what you have to do is have the front office put a roster that just can't win games. But I think also you have to just be in asset acquisition mode as much as possible right now. I mean, this team, despite having a couple of nice pieces in Chris Dunn and Markkanen and Levine when he gets back, and people have been saying that they're getting higher on the return for the Jimmy Butler trade, which is a whole nother story. But you still need to get more. I mean, you can't just say we're going to be bad this year and that's enough, because right now they're not as bad as they should be. So they need to get picks from other teams. They need to kind of help themselves in that way, because they'll be losing more games by getting rid of their good players and also getting more picks. So I think that's really going to be of importance, and I would expect that they will be making some moves around the deadline.
Well, let's hope so, because at the moment they're only, I guess they're tied with Phoenix for that third place or that third worst record in the league, but they're only really one game away from being, I guess, sitting sixth in terms of the worst records in the league, or depending on how you're looking at it, whether it's the best or worst, up and down, these sorts of things. But it'll only take one win, I guess, to sort of move them from third, where they're now sitting at third worst, to somewhere around that 5-6 range, depending on how other results fall. So with the game against the Philadelphia 76ers on Monday and then the Orlando Magic on Wednesday, it's not inconceivable that the team could win another two games, particularly against the Sixers at the moment that had a three overtime game against OKC the other day, and Joel Embiid played a career high in minutes and was clearly lumbering up and down the court looking very tired and sore. So it wouldn't surprise me if for whatever reason Embiid didn't play against the Bulls, and if that's the case, it really does extend the opportunity there for the Bulls to continue on their winning ways. So I am slightly concerned about the tank, and I know that there's been some smart people out there suggesting that the team is going to remain a bottom three team, that this obviously is a somewhat of a variance, things are unsustainable, and it will eventually even itself out. But at the same time, the team does look completely different, as I mentioned before. They look a lot more competitive, and once Levine is back and you sort of can take away Paul Zipser and even Denzel Valentine's minutes and put in Zach LaVine instead, again, that bolsters that rotation for Fred Hoiberg once more. So they really need to look at these Mirotić and Lopez trades, particularly Mirotić, as we sort of discussed, because I am one that isn't getting too concerned, I guess. I think that obviously we have to wait until January 15 to trade Mirotić, but at the same time, they have racked up 5 wins, and those 5 wins will count at the end of the season, and they're the sort of runs that you don't want to be having.
Absolutely, and I think also, I mean, people talk about this draft in the terms of, like, you need a top 5 pick if you want a franchise player, and I tend to agree with that, like, the top 5 guys are going to be very, very good, but I am so much higher on Luka Doncic than I am on any of the other top 4 guys, and I think, you know, this kid has the potential to be a really, really special player. And if this is a time that you have to be bad, it's like not the end of the world, because the prize could be Luka Doncic. And I think missing him, you know, it'd be great to get Ayton or whoever else, but I really want Doncic, and I think that they need to pretty much do whatever they can do in order to get him.
I 100% agree. I am a Doncic fan. He's the number one pick in my opinion, and that's exactly who I want the Bulls to have. And if we think about this rebuild and I guess project forward, Markkanen, Dunn and Levine are the building or the core that we start to build around. That three-man unit there looks completely different when you add someone like Luka Doncic to that rather than maybe Miles Bridges or someone of that nature. So it really does change the complexion of the rebuild if you can, I guess, get a guy like Doncic versus another guy that will be a very good player in someone like Miles Bridges. I'm using him and picking on him to a degree. Obviously, you can tell that by the tone of my voice. And whilst he will be a good player, he's not exactly the type of player you want to get in year one of the rebuild, where I guess this is probably where the Bulls are going to be at their worst. So it is really imperative for the team to get as high as... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, to use the jargon that the front office uses or has used in the past, like Levine, Dunn, Markkanen, I think those are all guys that you build with. I think Doncic is a guy that you build around. And think you can probably say that about Ayton too. But I'd be really happy with Ayton, but I think Doncic is far and away the best prospect. I think he's going to be far and away the best player of this draft. I think he's probably going to be like, you know, I said this on my show, top 15 to top 10 player in the league at some point in his career. He's that special. And when you put Dunn, LaVine, Doncic, Markkanen, and center out there, I think that's like a lineup that you could potentially be kind of scared of in the East.
Yeah, and whether it's Doncic or whether it's Ayton, they're both guys that play a role or play a position that the Bulls need. So they make complete logical sense to add either of those guys. And as a fan, looking at this rebuild, I think the rebuild goes along much quicker and it will be much more successful, I should say, if they, I guess, really start to prioritize the tank now and really lock in one of those top two or three positions and try to get one of those guys rather than keeping this thing afloat and keep running with it and maybe end up with the eighth pick in the draft or something like that. I think that would be catastrophic. Maybe that's me being a little bit dramatic, but at the same time, I'm all about the losses at this point whilst developing talent. And I don't really want to see guys like Mirotic leading the Bulls to winning streaks, even though it is, I guess, somewhat of a justification for like you and I, two Mirotic fans. It's awesome seeing him play this well, but at the same time, it's probably not what we want to see for the Bulls from a long term perspective. But I am a little bit worried, but we'll see how this goes out. And they do have some tough games coming up as well. So they've got obviously the Sixers and the Magic, which I spoke about before. But thereafter, they've got the Cavs, the Celtics, and the Bucks on the road. So those three games there that potentially could help maybe restore things back in order. But we shall see. But that's pretty much all I had for today. So, Will, I appreciate you coming on, mate. And like we said before, if it was the first time, I really did enjoy this catching up. It's always fun talking to you. Where can people follow you online?
You can follow me on Twitter at @WontGottlieb. You can subscribe and read my articles at The Athletic, which I hope you all do, and listen to my podcast with Stefan Noh, Bullcourt Press, which we tweet all of our episodes out. So you can find those there if you liked what I had to say. And I can't remember whether or not this is the first time I've been on the show, but it was a pleasure. Thanks again for having me.
No problem at all. We'll do it again sometime. And I guess people, if they're listening to this show or following Bulls HQ, there's a good chance they already know about Will. But I would also just to double down on that point, I would suggest definitely getting a subscription to The Athletic, because obviously Will is on there, but there are a lot of good Bulls writers on there, particularly Stefan Noh and Darnell Mabry, along with Will. They do probably the best work covering the Bulls online, and I would definitely suggest getting a subscription to The Athletic. And given that it is Christmas time, well, it's probably an opportune time to actually get a subscription.
Yeah, I don't know what the codes are to get good deals, but I would imagine that there will be a couple of good ones around Christmas, around New Year's. So look out for those. And we have a code on our podcast that gives you a little bit of a discount, I think 25% off. So listen to our show and you can find out what that is.
Exactly. So Will, thank you for joining me, and we'll catch up soon.
Absolutely. Thanks again.